I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, a visibly frustrated President Biden told the 80 million Americans who are not vaccinated against COVID-19, even though they are eligible, enough is enough.
My message to unvaccinated Americans is this. What more is there to wait for? What more do you need to see? We've made vaccinations free, safe, and convenient. The vaccine is FDA approval. Over 200 million Americans have gotten at least one shot. We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us. So please do the right thing, but just don't take it from me. Listen to the voices of unvaccinated Americans who are lying in hospital beds, taking their final breath, saying, if only I'd gotten vaccinated. If only. It's a tragedy. Please don't let it become yours.
Biden outlined a series of mandates requiring vaccinations or weekly testing for government employees, for contract workers, for most healthcare workers, Head Start workers, and those hired by companies with more than 100 employees. While vaccination rates have increased in recent weeks, infection rates are surging to more than 150,000 cases a day. Many hospitals are swamped treating patients, the overwhelming majority of whom are unvaccinated. In fact, Idaho announced this week that some of their hospitals will have to ration care because they have so many coronavirus patients. And some doctors are saying they will no longer treat their unvaccinated patients. Meanwhile, many schools are on the front lines of the battle over mask mandates. Today in Radio Times, what are the medical and ethical issues all of this raises about public health, about treatment, about freedom of choice and responsibility? We've got a lot to talk about. And joining us are Arthur Kaplan. He's the Mitty Professor of Bioethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine, also founding director of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU Langone. And Art Kaplan, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I should say to our listeners, and he joins us by Skype. And also joining us is Tara Haley. She's a freelance science journalist, author of Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. And Tara Haley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, thanks very much.
You know, there must be 80 million different reasons why the unvaccinated are the unvaccinated. But let's separate out those people who have been described, Tara, as a kind of wait and see unvaccinated. They're on the fence, frankly, about whether they want to get vaccinated or not. Taking Biden's overall message yesterday, do you think some of them were persuaded?
It's hard to say because I think it's more than just vaccine refusers and the wait and seers. Within that wait and seers, there's a lot of subgroups, and that includes subgroups that he said we've made it easy, we've made it free, we've made it convenient. And I would actually disagree with that. I think there's still a lot to be done in terms of access. I think, I live in Texas, and I know that there are people here that still live in parts of the state where there's no pharmacy, it may or may not be very easy to actually get the vaccine because of the time that they have to spend to go, to drive out to it. So I think that, rural areas where you already are going to have higher hesitancy and lower rates, it's not necessarily as easy as he seems to think it is. I also think that there's not been enough done in terms of access when it comes to people who work and need to be able to continue working, despite side effects. We've got people who are in the companies that one of his previous initiatives was to ensure that sick leave was offered to anyone who needed to take off time for side effects. But that doesn't apply to the single mom who has two jobs. Who's not a salaried worker, and she may not be able to afford to take off 2 days. She doesn't even get sick leave. It's not a thing at her work, much less whether or not she has childcare for that child. And we don't know how many people are like that, but access also includes those individuals, and it includes individuals who need someone that they can actually ask questions and get accurate answers that reassure them. I think access, that's a really important part of access, is being able to have someone in your life that you trust who can give you accurate answers about the vaccine. And we can't assume that everyone has that. Not everybody has that in their life. Not everybody has their own primary care provider. So, within that wait and see, there's a lot of people who might be willing to get the vaccine or even want the vaccine who don't have the access that a lot of people seem to assume that they have.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Art Kaplan. And based on what Tara Haley was just saying there, obviously there are multiple reasons why some of these 80 million people are not vaccinated. But what do you think of mandates just as a public health policy?
I think they're great. I think one of my criticisms of the Biden 2.0 move on COVID is that it came a little bit too late. I think we've seen too many hospitals overwhelmed in locales where vaccine hesitancy and resistance is high. And that impacts not just people who get COVID, but people who need to get services because they had a heart attack or a car accident. As you may remember, Marty, I'm pretty tied into transplant in the U.S., and I know at least three kidney transplants have been postponed in Florida over the past 2 weeks because they couldn't get a bed because they're full of COVID patients in Tampa. And obviously that's burdening the rest of us. So mandates mean we're going to put the burden not on the people who say I'm going to opt into the system, but we're going to put the burden on the people who say, for whatever reason, I choose not to get a vaccine. And I heard what Tara said, and right, I agree, there's definitely access issues. But morally, you should be doing the right thing to protect yourself and the community. You should be doing the right thing to protect children who can't vaccinate because they're not eligible, people who need protection because they have immune diseases or cancer, or suffer from immune deficiencies. That's the duty of the good citizen, if you will. And I think Biden, to his credit, started to shift the moral framework when he got on board mandates.
Well, let me pick up on that. And I do want to get back to Tara, but let me just pick up that with you, Art. If that good citizen, though, is, as Tara described, the mom with two jobs and a couple of kids and no health insurance and no sick days, what does she do?
Well, look, we have been trying to eradicate polio around the world, Gates Foundation, others, for decades. And what you do in India, what you do in very poor countries, is you bring those vaccines to the village, you bring the doctor there and administer things, and that is what we should be doing in this country. We went halfway. We opened up the sports stadiums. We had the civic center available. We've tried to get things out to the chain pharmacies to make it easier, but we haven't done enough. We know from mass vaccination campaigns, smallpox way back, polio now, you really do have to hit all the rural areas. You've got to really mount, you know, a sincere outreach effort. And that has to be a part of mandates.
Well, let me go back to you, Tara. I know you had a couple, some technical issues, so hopefully you are back with us and you may not have heard everything that Art had to say. But let me just toss something else on the table and something that I know that you have looked at, which is the significant but small percentage of the population who are who we would describe as anti-vaxxers. For whatever reason, they are not going to get vaccinated. Some of them, you know, believing some pretty outlandish conspiracy theories. What do we do about them?
Well, first, I'm going to, just like I did with the other group, I'm going to split that group into subgroups. Within the group of people who are not getting the vaccine, even if they have good access, there's vaccine refusers and there's anti-vaccine activists. And I think that is also an important distinction, mm-hmm. because a vaccine refuser is somebody who refuses to get the vaccine. They may or may not be anti-vaccine. And I don't know if, you know, there's, I know it gets a little bit complicated, but they've decided not to get the vaccine, but they're not necessarily out there actively encouraging other people to protest against the vaccine or explicitly discouraging other people from getting the vaccine. So anti-vaccine activists are a much smaller group. Vaccine refusers are still a substantial problem, and we need to figure out if, you know, is it worth it to invest in resources and persuading them, and is there a way to persuade them? But even within that group of the larger, you know, people who are not getting the vaccine despite access, the actual anti-vaccine activists are an even smaller group. The problem is that they're a very loud group. And sometimes we even inadvertently amplify their voices because people find what they say so ridiculous. And by making fun of them and pointing out how ridiculous they are, we're repeating their arguments, which is not really helpful. So we're expanding their message. And that's not terribly helpful either. We need to do better at marginalizing those voices addition to debunking what they're saying.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was on the fence about quoting somebody, and I'm not going to, based in part on what you just said there, Tara. But Art, let me go back to you. And this raises questions about a whole host of things, but including, you know, carrots and sticks. I mean, you can give people $100 to get vaccinated, or you can say you can't have this job because you are not vaccinated.
Well, my favorite was in Washington State, you got free joints if you get vaccinated.
Truly?
So, yeah. So we've seen.
Did it work?
No, they don't work. Here's where we've been in vaccine policy. We started out with, let's get the vaccine out there and persuade people that it's good for them and it's good for their community and it's the right thing to do. And that, you know, achieved some percentage of vaccination. Then we went to incentives, free fishing license, free joints, enter a lottery, college education, and in some instances, literally offering people $100, That moved a couple of percentage points. The studies show not a ton of people were motivated even by that. That, by the way, Marty, is consistent. When people have tried to change lifestyles through incentives, you know, lose weight, exercise more, it turns out you really have to give them huge incentives because the bad behavior is pretty self-rewarding. So in general, incentives helped a little, but now where we're at is mandate. And the reason we've shifted there is, I don't want to say we're giving up on persuasion. I don't want to say it's not important to debunk fears or misinformation, but we can't wait. We're in month 18 of this plague. It's still causing huge amount of death and hospitalization and cost, psychosocial burden on students. And so what we've now said is, yeah, we tried to persuade you. And yes, we tried to incentivize you, but too many of you are still not there. It's time to bring in more force. It's time to put the penalty, if you will. You don't have to get vaccinated, but you can't work. And perhaps you can't fly. Perhaps you can't go to a restaurant. Perhaps you can't go to your gym. Liberty starts to become contingent on vaccination. I think that will help a lot.
Well, let me pick up on that. But first, a very short break, and I want to make sure our listeners can join our conversation. We're talking about the fact that yesterday President Biden issued a whole series of mandates to try to, frankly, inspire people to get vaccinated against COVID-19. We're talking about some of the pros and cons of that with Art Kaplan and with Tara Haley. We want to hear from you, as always, on Radio Times. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're getting a response to President Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate that he issued yesterday, talking about some of the ethical issues at stake, about things like treatment and hesitancy and anti-vaxxers and public health and responsibility and choice and liberty. Joining us, medical ethicist Art Kaplan and science journalist Tara Haley. Tara, let me pick up on this liberty idea that Art put out there, because we hear from some people who oppose, frankly, vaccines, but also masks, that they see this as their liberty, their right to choose what it is that they want to do for themselves related to this virus and even their children. How do we wrestle with that? Or do we?
We do need to wrestle with it. And I agree with everything that Art has said. And I think we need to do a better job of helping people understand precisely how their actions affect other people. You know, there's still that big gap in understanding that, you know, your freedoms stop when you start to harm other people. And by not getting vaccinated, you are harming other people. And I think that message, people are hearing that, but they're not hearing the whys. I would like to see, I agree with Art that we shouldn't give up on persuasion. I also agree with Art that mandates, the time has come given the fact that we aren't moving the needle enough. But I would love to see some town hall type things. We have Biden on national TV pleading with people. Why don't we get a bunch of really influential conservative Republican lawmakers on television in a town hall like thing where they talk with, individuals like, I don't know if Fauci would be a good person, but, talk with doctors and ask them the questions that the people in the country have. Listen to the researchers and doctors counter those and see that the conservative Republicans who are themselves vaccinated agree with those. I think a lot of Americans who are conservative and have, all kinds of ideas about the vaccine or believe this liberty idea that it's their freedom not to get vaccinated need to hear that and need to hear how the fact that they're not vaccinated actually harms their community. That's not a, it's not a free freedom kind of thing. It's not live and let live when you're in a community. I think we need to be doing more of that kind of outreach at a national level. I'd like to see it at local levels too, in places like, places of worship, for example. But I think doing it at a national level with really influential conservatives would be helpful. I'd love to see, Tucker Carlson on board, but that's a lot to ask for. So we'll just stick with the Republicans for now.
Well, I have a few ideas. And actually, let me toss this back to you, Art Kaplan, the governor of West Virginia, the governor of are we talking Alabama here? I think I am. Mississippi, excuse me. Both Republicans, and both have been very outspoken, very frustrated, frankly, with people who are unvaccinated in their states. Are they good messengers?
Yes. And Chris Christie falls into that category a little bit, too. And there have been others. But look, there's a deep irony here. The reason we are so obsessed with vaccines as our way out of the pandemic is Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't develop testing. Donald Trump didn't favor masking. Donald Trump wouldn't quarantine or isolate. Donald Trump spent the vast amount of his presidency in response to COVID touting vaccines. To let the conservative Republicans out there, the DeSantises, the Johnsons, the Rand Pauls, and so on, all of a sudden decide they're going to impugn what they were silent about for a year, that hypocrisy needs to be called out too. It's Donald Trump who said, we're going to vaccinate our way out of this through mass vaccination, and immediately got himself vaccinated. So, this flip to all of a sudden it's liberty or they're dangerous vaccines or they're still experimental, coming from conservative Republican leadership, boy, that has gone it needs to be remarked upon, shall we say, in a vociferous way. And as Tara pointed out, and I'll say it again, this notion that I'm free to do what I want, which I hear again and again and again from neighbors and friends who are hesitant about vaccines or don't like mandates, it comes out of like a seventh grade understanding of liberty. I mean, come on, you can't drive on either side of the road. I'd like to see some of these people attempt to wander the streets naked as a matter of their choice if they were nudists. I'd like to see people say basically, I can come in your house, eat your food. Liberty comes with constraints. Indeed, if you really are conservative and you go back to Adam Smith, let's say, it requires a moral agreement among the community to set limits so that you don't harm one another by your choices. Otherwise, as pioneers of liberty like John Stuart Mill and Adam Smith understood, the thing falls apart. So, of course, we want to respect people's choice. I'm not going to send the vaccine police to get them. But that means consequences if you won't vaccinate.
Well, let me pick up on that. And Art, I want to get back to you on this issue of consequences, because I know you have some ideas about how people should essentially pay for that decision. But let me turn to you, Tara. And I realize we could do a whole hour on this, but how did vaccines and masks by association become so partisan, become so sort of embedded in this partisan political war?
We could definitely spend an hour on that.
Which we can't,
I know. The super short version is that during 2015, we had a measles outbreak. And during that measles outbreak, a lot of parents said they were fed up with the anti-vaxxers, with the people who refused to vaccinate. And they pushed for laws to remove philosophical and personal belief exemptions from school vaccination requirements so that the only reason a child could be unvaccinated and attend school is if they had a medical exemption. In doing that, a lot of the anti-vaccine activists, they bound together to oppose that, but they very quickly found out that trying to spread misinformation about vaccines and claiming there were harms to these vaccines beyond, you know, the extremely rare adverse events we knew about, that didn't work. It didn't sway lawmakers. So they switched tactics, and this was right on the tail end of the Tea Party. You know, the Tea Party had swelled up. It was starting to peter out, but we had this huge sort of ideological shift in the big, like, freedom idea. And they shifted to, well, it's my right and my freedom to raise my child as I see fit. And that had a lot of traction, and that conservative lawmakers realized that was, you know, that was their cry, and it was a natural fit. And over time, as the anti-vaccine activists realized the power of that message, it increased. There was a lot of collaboration and cooperation across the country. It was still very grassroots, but at the same time, there was a lot of money coming in to the anti-vaccine movement with a lot of the larger influencers at the top. And this whole movement sort of merged with the conservative, that far right, very highly freedom oriented conservative faction, which Donald Trump rode into office. Donald Trump did not cause anti-vaccine activism or vaccine hesitancy, but he did a lot to increase it and to support it. Even in the debates, when he was making false comments about things that vaccines can do, ranting about his neighbor whose kid or friend whose kid, developed autism. So he then reinforced that to a point that it became a mainstream part of the conservative party, despite the fact that we went 200 years without it really being partisan on either side.
Picking up on that and going back to you, Art Kaplan, so how do you counter that? I mean, if you have a whole movement that's kind of based on these ideas that Tara was just talking about, are facts enough? Is Fauci enough?
No, not at this point. Sorry to say, persuasion is not going to dent an ideology that is deeply rooted in personal freedom that is unlimited. Look, we've had mandates, Marty, school mandates for kids to get shots. You may remember when I was back in Philly, I pushed through a mandate for healthcare workers to get flu shots. That was mandatory, a huge group of people. The military has had mandates on vaccines forever. The way you do this at this point is to say, look, you have your choices, but there are consequences. If you choose not to vaccinate, first of all, it's going to be hard for you to get a job at many places, not just the ones that are governed by federal OSHA requirements, but anywhere. I'm encouraging employers to say, make the workplace safe, and it's their right to dictate safety policies, and I think they should go that way, turn up the heat, if you will, on the consequences of a non-vaccination choice. And maybe we want to start thinking about things like, if you infect me, there's a case that I know of right now where a teacher went to work knowing she was COVID positive, infected 12 kids in the classroom. They know it was her. That is liability.
Wow.
It's just like going around saying, I know I'm HIV positive and I'm not going to tell my partners and I'm going to make them ill. 45 states criminalize that.
Are you suggesting that?
Yeah, sure. Hold people accountable. If you go out there and you know you're COVID and you show up somewhere and I can trace the infection back to you, you are absolutely responsible for the harm caused to me.
Let me just quickly reintroduce, and we got a lot of comments here, our guests, and make sure that everyone can join our conversation. That's Art Kaplan. He's the professor of bioethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. Tara Haley, also with us. She's a freelance science journalist. Wrote a book recently called Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. Let me read a couple of comments. A tweet from one of our listeners. I know lots of minimum wage workers with kids and tight schedules who have been vaccinated. Get it on the day before or the day of in case of reaction. You can now walk into any chain pharmacy and get one. I'm sick of excuses that are killing and disabling others. Here's a comment from Patty. If the willfully unvaccinated and unmasked also were harming innocent people in any other way, driving while intoxicated, for instance, they would face consequences. This should be no different. A comment from Judy, who says, I'm tired of being punished and penalized for being healthy. The virus is going to keep mutating, and boosters can't keep up. It is a lot smarter than Joe Biden. And Tara, sort of reading into what Judy says there, it seems like she is one of these people who is suspicious of and perhaps even reluctant to get a vaccine.
Yeah, she does sound like that. And I mean, it's, you know, there are people who can be persuaded and there are people who cannot be persuaded. And I agree that if the group of people who cannot be persuaded is large enough, then consequences, as Art said, are the only option, because they are continuing the pandemic. They are infecting other people or putting other people at risk for infection. And I think one of my favorite analogies is one that here in Texas, a epidemiologist in San Antonio, Charisse Rohr Allegrini, said, we don't allow people to drive drunk. You could drive, you could make it driving, I don't know, 50 miles drunk and not hit a single person. And that might be great. But you might also cause an accident that leads to a massive pileup and kills a bunch of people. You don't know which of those is going to happen. And that's a lot how this is, because you don't know that you may not know that you're infected when you're unvaccinated, and you know you're contagious for 2 days or something before the symptoms show up. You may be infecting people that whole time, especially if you're one of those who won't mask either. And that is a serious problem. I mean, you could kill people. I wonder how many people who are not vaccinated really grasp that they are capable of killing someone by simply not being vaccinated. I don't know if that message has gotten through in a way that they actually believe.
But is that a message, Terry, you think that would change people's minds to say you are killing people because you are not vaccinated? And on top of that, and there might be a correlation here, and you're not wearing a mask.
I'd like to say that it would, but following on the era of Donald Trump, I don't think so. I think we have a massive empathy deficit going on in the United States today that began with, it preceded Donald Trump, but he really exploited it and opened it up and increased it. And then on top of that, people are exhausted. They're exhausted by, you know, the pandemic exhaustion that's going on, the pandemic fatigue. Then adds to that, and people are like, I'm tired of you telling me what to do. I'm going to do what's right for me. And I think that, you know, the selfishness and the lack of empathy that has really risen up from the combination of people who support Donald Trump and from the people who are just exhausted, like that, you know, the convergence of those, I don't think that is going to be adequate for persuading people. But I think that's why, you know, if someone's insistent on driving drunk, we don't just say, oh, okay, then they're going to drive drunk, right? There's consequences
to
that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. All right, let me toss something else out here. I was checking with Kaiser Health Foundation, and they said so far the cost for treating COVID patients is something like $2 billion, that's with a B, $2 billion. You have talked about somehow charging people who have added to that cost, in a sense, making them pay for the additional costs for treating COVID-19. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, there are a number of ways to hold people accountable for bad choices with respect to COVID. And these are linked up to the plague. I'm not getting into arguments about what we should do with obesity or what we should do about people who don't wear a helmet if they operate a bike or a motorcycle or something, but COVID specific, because we're in a crisis, an emergency situation recognized by our government and the World Health Organization as well. So you can charge people more. for their copays. If you find out they're not vaccinated, they pay a bigger copay than somebody who was vaccinated if they wind up using expensive medical services. By the way, already happening. Some private insurers are basically saying, we're not covering your copay anymore. This isn't something I'm dreaming up. It's happening. People could get charged more for their life insurance, other forms of insurance outside of healthcare. That absolutely will start to happen. They'll take into account whether you're vaccinated or not. And we certainly could see businesses saying, United Airlines is already doing this, you're just going to pay more if you won't vaccinate. Your health insurance premium is going to go up. And just to get your coverage, you're going to pay an extra couple of $100 a month to insure against these hospital costs. So part of the reason to do it is not just penalizing a bad choice. It's to incentivize again, the desire to get people to vaccinate. That's why I'm not trying to get into an argument, as I said, about, you know, well, what about other bad behaviors and penalizing that? What I'm interested in here is saying, be aware, it's going to cost you. We've got to get you to vaccinate, so we're going to start to make you pay.
Tara, we have about a minute before a second break here, but is there a way to make the messaging more easy to understand? Has it been garbled in the past?
Oh, we could spend a whole hour talking about how it's been garbled. Absolutely. I have lots of issues with the messaging that's come from different national policy organizations.
But even by the way, boosters were very clear about all that.
Hold on to that, Art. And Tara, go ahead. We're almost up on a break, but yeah, finish your thought.
I actually lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry. Why don't we pick that up when we get back from the break?
That's okay. This is live radio, folks, so things like that happen. We are talking about a whole host of things, including vaccine mandates for COVID-19 and some of the ethical medical issues that all of this has raised over the last 18 months since we've been dealing with this pandemic. Our guests are Tara Haley. She's a freelance science journalist, author of Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. Also with us is Arthur Kaplan, Art Kaplan. He's a professor of bioethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. And as always, we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let me play another clip from President Biden yesterday speaking about a series of mask mandates.
This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And it's caused by the fact that despite America having unprecedented and successful vaccination program, despite the fact that for almost 5 months, free vaccines have been available in 80,000 different locations, we still have nearly 80 million Americans who have failed to get the shot. And to make matters worse, there are elected officials actively working to undermine the fight against COVID-19. Instead of encouraging people to get vaccinated and mask up, they're ordering mobile morgues for the unvaccinated dying from COVID in their communities. This is totally unacceptable.
Tara, let me go back to you. We were talking about messaging, but let me just add this to what we were talking about right before the break. The president says this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Not the first time any of us have heard him or other people talk about the pandemic this way. What do you make of that sentence?
It's about the most unhelpful and damaging sentence I can think of. It's incredibly unhelpful. To back up a little bit what I was going to say before the break, that I finally was able to pick up the string of my thoughts, I would like to see something. The messaging has been very garbled, and a large part of that is that it is difficult to convey the science related to this. It's not simple science. There's a lot of complexities to understanding how vaccines work, especially these new kinds of vaccines in terms of their methodology that's been approved. They're not new in the sense that, like, this technology has been used for 10 years, but we haven't had an approved vaccine that has used this particular mechanism before. I'd like to see some kind of like fireside chats with Fauci or, you know, an actual weekly regular thing. And I don't know if Fauci's the right person now that he's, you know, ideas of him have been politicized, but we need one voice or a couple voices every single week on national television or national radio or both, you know, with YouTube versions and spread on Instagram, where they're explaining things about the vaccine and they're explaining, you know, why things are changing, why the variant can, you know, overcome this and kind of try and cut through all of that. Because we know from social psychology research that repeated exposure to something is what it takes for you to start to change your mind. You don't change your mind on a dime. And I'm not saying that's going to persuade like all of these people who are outright refusing, but hearing those, you know, a regular, over time, you listen to that. If it's a person who's a good communicator, a person who really understands the science, and a person who also understands the science of vaccine hesitancy, which is very different from the science of vaccines, you know, over time, they start to make sense. It's kind of like, you know, you think about the person who starts listening to conservative radio because they're curious. And then over time, it's like, that guy makes a lot of sense. Mm. You know, that happens. And we could be exploiting that and we're not. Going on to the pandemic, the unvaccinated, there are so many problems with that statement. The first problem is that it's not true. It's just false. First of all, I've got two kids under 12. Guess what? They can't be vaccinated. And one of them, in fact, has been, because one of them is enrolled in the Moderna trial and got his second shot yesterday.
Interesting.
But I mean, that's a very unusual situation. My friends are terrified right now because their kids can't be vaccinated. So you're sitting up there saying it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Yeah, well, go talk to the FDA and ask why they expanded the trials to delay the ability of Pfizer to submit for the EUA. Why are they dragging their feet when our kids are being forced to go to school in states where they can't allow masking or can't require masking? You know, so that's one part of it. My husband takes a drug that suppresses his immune system. He's gotten his booster. He's been three times vaccinated. And you know what? He's terrified to go into Walmart. We're in Texas. We don't know what's around, because even a breakthrough infection could put him in the hospital. He's got four other risk factors aside from being immune compromised. Do the 10 million plus people in the United States who have gotten vaccinated, maybe even gotten three times vaccinated, do they not count to Biden? You know, they're just as much at risk. And then there's the fact that the pandemic is more than just COVID. It's the restrictions, it's the exhaustion, it's the fear, it's the anxiety. And that affects all of us, whether we are vaccinated or not. This pandemic is not just, do you have COVID or do you not have COVID? It's the entire experience of living through this pandemic. And that pandemic is affecting every single one of us, including those of us who are fully vaccinated. So it's not a helpful message. It's not persuasive. It carries an underlying sense of blame. And we know from a lot, loads of health research that blaming and shaming people doesn't work. Consequences can work and mandates can work, but blaming and shaming people can actually cause them to dig in their heels.
What do you think, Art?
Well, I agree. I think the messaging has been ambivalent. For example, on this third shot booster issue, recommendations came out, it's going to be by September, then it isn't, then we need more data, then I don't know. And as Fauci has said, and I've been arguing, I don't even think it's a booster. I think what we have with Pfizer and Moderna are three-shot vaccines. It's very common that vaccines require three shots to be, quote-unquote, adequately effective. But the messaging around that, I've got people saying, I'm sneaking off to my doctor to get a booster. There are definitely parents bringing their kids into the pediatrician at age 10 and 11 and saying, please do this, give them the shot. Give her the shot. I'm just too nervous about exposing them and going to school. But as you can tell, Marty and Tara, I want to continue persuasion efforts, and I don't mind fireside chats, and I'm all for trying to battle misinformation. But if we're going to get through this thing and not be talking about it, not next year, for many years, because of the international situation with no vaccination out there and constant mutations and strains popping up, we've got to go to tough mandates. We've got to really say we can't tolerate non-masking, non-vaccination. And we haven't said it, but we could use a lot more testing, cheap, easy to do testing. I would like to see, you know, a home test kit that you could use every day before you sent your kid to school.
Well, me too. And it almost sounded like Biden was saying yesterday that that's a possibility that people can get at cost, some kind of home testing.
By the way, Mark, sorry, you know, it's more than a possibility. Germany and the Netherlands do it now.
Okay.
Cheap.
All right.
I think it's like $2.
Yeah, that's let me toss something back to you, Art, and just another part of this whole conversation I wanted to toss out there. And it sounded like Biden said yesterday to physicians, you know, talk to your reluctant, to your unvaccinated patients and try to persuade them. We're also reading about doctors who are saying to their unvaccinated patients, don't come in the office. I cannot treat you. As a medical ethicist, where do you come down on that?
Well, 2 points, and Tara made this point earlier. There are a lot of Americans who don't have a doctor. And there are a lot of Americans, even when they do have a doctor, they don't have the same one as their primary care person.
That's true.
And then if you went in and tried to talk to them beyond your complaint, they're watching the clock because they're sort of forced by their employer to spend, you know, 5 minutes with you and then we're done. So that conversation, I don't know, maybe it takes place in TV medicine, but it's not the real world. That's a limit on what frontline doctors can do. In terms of saying, I don't want you in the office because you put me at risk, because you put the people in the waiting room at risk, because we have kids around here, we have no right to health care. The doctor doesn't have to take you in. Doctor can't abandon you, can't leave you without care once they've initiated. But in primary care settings, clinics, doctor's office, outside the hospital, they do have that discretion. Will it work? I don't know. We've tried it with pediatricians saying they won't care for children whose parents won't get them mandated shots, the other ones, to go to school. And it did have some impact. Some parents came around and got their kids vaccinated. But we have to watch it, is what I would say. Is it fundamentally immoral? No. Can't do it at the ER, but you could do it at the primary care doctor's office, if you have one. If you're lucky enough to have such a doctor.
Yeah, well, one thing we have learned from this pandemic is how unprepared our healthcare system has been to deal with all the variables from this particular virus. Let me read some more comments. Bob says, I found it reasonably persuasive to say hundreds of thousands have died or gotten very ill from COVID, which is hard to dispute. Amy says the vaccine cards are too easy to fake. A listener says it's funny that virtually all liberal Democratic candidates and leaders stated they would not get vaccinated during the 2020 election cycle. Suddenly they are health professionals. I'm not sure that's entirely true, but we'll leave that out there. Let me turn to you, Tara. And I mentioned Idaho in my introduction, that some of the hospitals in Idaho are so filled with coronavirus patients that they are thinking about, if not rationing, trying to figure out how to decide, you know, who gets care and who doesn't get care. I hope this doesn't become a nationwide issue, but how do we address that?
To be fair, this is probably more an Art's area, but I've read some of what Art has written on this. And I mean, we have well-established protocols and algorithms and ways of thinking through how you ration care. Rationing care is not a new idea at all. There's been other situations where that becomes important. When you have a terrorist event or any kind of mass casualty event, you have similar issues. And generally, you look at who is going to have the best survivability. I mean, you do this, military is expert at this. They have military hospitals have to do this all the time, in war zones, that is, where you look at who has the best shot of survival. And I think I know where you're probably going to head with this is, you know, I've spoken before about how people who are the big anti-vaccine influencers at the top, who really are spreading this misinformation, which is an incredibly small but an incredibly influential group, you know, do they or even other, you know, sort of more grassroots anti-vaccine activists have the right to be, you know, is it fair to refuse them care in lieu of someone who was vaccinated? And I would say you can't use vaccination status alone to determine whether they get care or not. You still have to take into account, you know, who has the best likelihood of survival. And whether they're vaccinated may play a role in that, certainly, because if you are vaccinated, you are less likely to die. You're less likely to be hospitalized in the first place. But if you've got a 20-year-old unvaccinated patient and you've got a 90-year-old vaccinated patient, you know, it's not, you know, unless you've got a really good reason to believe that 90-year-old has a better chance of survival than the 20-year-old, I don't see how it's going to be very ethical to refuse the care to the 20-year-old simply because they're unvaccinated.
I was reading, or heard someone say yesterday that hospitals are not in the blame and punishment business. But, you know, if we get to, and you and I have talked about rationing over the years. I don't know if we're, you know, we're, if we're there yet in a kind of universal way, but do we have to be prepared?
Oh, you absolutely have to be prepared. Tara, by the way, had my position exactly right. It's basically trying to predict who will do best when you're stuck with short resources. We practice this, by the way, for things like terrorist attacks, train collisions. It's not like we never faced local rationing scenarios. We have agreement, by the way, all the way back, if anybody remembers, the old days of H1N1 flu outbreaks. We had scenarios implemented then. Many, many policies have been put forward. There's some variability with people taking into account nuances, such as comorbidities, how much do they influence what's going on, whether you have diabetes or underlying hypertension. But the bottom line is we don't want to get there. So we've got to push people to say, look at the situation in some of these hospitals. The staff is burning out. The resources are scarce. They're going to have to set prioritization. You can't get in if you need, say, a colonoscopy. I think Senator Amy Klobuchar said she had delayed going in for her breast exam because she couldn't get in. You don't want all of that. Let's push vaccination hard so that we have a stable system. And Marty, the reason to really worry, we're headed toward winter. And some of this problem could spread around the rest of the country, not just to the south. And so vaccination becomes really important, given that, you know, the summer is coming to an end and we're going indoors.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but I do want to ask about ivermectin. And I saw that the FDA put out a message to people that were considering using this, Tara. You know, you're not a horse, you're not a cow. And it's just so hard to understand why someone would choose something that has been untested, the way ivermectin has been untested to deal with COVID-19, and yet be so reluctant to, now that the FDA has signed off on these vaccines, something that has been approved by the government.
Yeah, I will say, I don't think that messaging of you're not a horse, you're not a cow is helpful either, because we know that ivermectin is used as an antiparasitic in other countries where it's an issue. So I think that's another example of poor messaging. I frankly find that demeaning and a little bit xenophobic and racist, since it does get used in other countries for that purpose. But you're right that it's not been thoroughly tested with COVID-19 and found to be effective. There have been lots of studies published about it claiming that it works, but there's lots of flaws in those studies. BuzzFeed had a wonderful article that looked at the history of the recent history, like how ivermectin came to be. And it is frustrating. It's, you know, people, it's ideological. People are latching on to what they see as their group identity's solution to something. The in-group, out-group influence of believing that this is their, this is positive for them is really frustrating. And if there was only a way we could get people like Joe Rogan, who recently was diagnosed with COVID, and so he's throwing the kitchen sink at it. He mentioned monoclonal antibodies and ivermectin, and you know, someone like him with his influence saying that is really damaging. I don't know how we battle that. It's a tough one, and it is very frustrating to think that people are going to take, you know, an antiparasitic for a viral disease. That's the part that doesn't make sense. Not whether you're a horse, you're a cow, or a human, but the fact that you're taking an antiparasitic for a viral disease just makes no sense when we have no evidence that it actually works.
Well, we could go on. The clock is telling me we have to end our conversation. Tara Haley, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. She's a freelance science journalist, author of Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. Art Kaplan, as always, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. He joined us by Skype, and he's a professor of bioethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. We appreciate all those comments to the show. You can certainly carry on this conversation on our Facebook page. For more information about the show, go to whyy.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.